Okay, let's see where we can help each other with the Bible here. We'll start with the ladies' group. Where are we going to start with, please? Give us one.
Genesis 1.
Genesis 1, what's that going to teach you?
The role of humans. And what else?
Sorry, Genesis 1 is going to teach the role of humans.
And what our duty is towards the earth.
Yeah, it's very important. We are to have dominion over the earth, to subdue the earth, in God's way of doing it. The trouble is the word dominion over and subdue in a pagan way of thinking is oppressive and exploitative. But in a Bible way of having dominion, like God, is to serve and to care. It's the exact opposite way of doing it. But we have it. No other part of creation does. Yes? What are we going to say here?
Romans 8.
Romans 8.
All of creation is groaning and sort of in anticipation of completion of God's plan.
So we can look at creation passages, but we can look at the end of the world passages. That the whole of creation is now groaning, waiting for our redemption, the redemption of our bodies. Romans 8. We've got a verse number for note takers. 22. They've stolen your thunder, have they, bro? Yeah, it's typical. I trust them, yeah. Never mind. So what else did we say here?
Revelation 21-22.
What about Revelation 21 and 22?
Well, the world's going to get fixed anyway, so we don't really need to worry.
The world's going to get fixed anyway, so we don't need to worry about it. Well, slide over statement. Because we are created to look after it. But on the other hand, yes, the world, it's God who's going to bring it to an end, not humans. Right? There'll be wars and rumours of wars. Who found that passage? Right? There'll be wars and rumours. There'll be earthquakes, fires, famine. Matthew's gospel, that's right. So the world is going to be messy. Now, so we've got creation. And we've got the world in a mess, seeking, groaning, longing for redemption. And we've got the world coming to an end differently. Yes? What else did you find?
Jesus calming the storm in Mark 4.
Yes, what about Jesus calming the storm in Mark 4? It's very impressive.
Oh, it shows authority over nature.
Shows a man with authority over nature. Yes?
Yeah.
Extraordinary authority, because I was down at Coogee Beach yesterday, and the waves from the storm last week are still enormous. But when Jesus said, be still, they are immediately cease. Whereas when there's a storm, the storm stops, but it takes 2 or 3 days for the sea to calm down. But not when Jesus calms it. It's just instantaneous. An ordinary power. Yes, what did you guys find? Speak up.
When the Lord replies to Job.
When the Lord replies to Job. Yes, what does he? He says lots of things, but what was the thing that you picked up on?
He knows what's happening in his creation.
Yes, he knows what's happening in his creation. Yes, come back to his creation, yes?
Genesis 3, where the ground is cursed because of sin.
Yes, Genesis 3, the ground is cursed. So you see, oh no, we haven't said Genesis 1 yet. Oh no, I'll come back to Genesis 3 and the ground being cursed. Yes, we've had that. What did you guys find?
2 Peter 3.
Yes, that's really good. I like 2 Peter 2 and 2 Peter 1 as well. What in 2 Peter 3 in particular?
2 Peter 3, where in judgment the world is actually going to be destroyed.
Yes, the world's actually going to be destroyed. A new heavens and new earth created. Right, okay. What did you find?
Jonah 4:11. God cares for the cattle.
God cares for the cattle. Isn't that lovely? Jonah 4:11. Because there are 40,000 or some number of souls.
120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle.
That's why God wouldn't destroy Nineveh. Yes. Okay. So God cares for the cattle. Jonah 4. Yeah, that's lovely to know. Did I come here? No, I didn't come here.
We were talking about how the issues could be totally fixed, such as in Revelation,
but right now, stewardship. So we can't fix the problems, but we can try and help.
We can't fix the problems, but we can try and help them. And, okay, come back about creation. We are created over the thing, but what else do we know about creation and this world from Genesis 1?
It's good.
It's good, that's right. The whole creation's good. It fulfills God's purpose. Not perfect, we've got to subdue it. We've got to maintain it. We've got to look after it. Right? But it is good. However, we now see, now I'm back to where were you at? What were you saying? I've forgotten.
It says free, the ground is cursed.
But the ground has now been cursed in chapter 3. So, chapter 1, God creates a good earth, creates us over the earth. But, and chapter 2, no one's mentioned. Anyone mention chapter 2 yet? No. Hands up who can tell me. So. What about it? Sorry? No, good. Well, that was a good mention, wasn't it? Take that man's name. Yes?
Man was told to work the ground and to work and keep it and also to name the creatures.
Yes. So the sense of what it means to be in the image of God subduing the world is caught up in chapter 2. We're to be the gardener in the garden. Right? There is our nature. That's our role to be. That's what I mean, dominion. Yes, a gardener has dominion over a garden. And actually, it's not to exploit the garden, it's to make the garden thrive and flourish, right? That's our dominion role. So we're created over this good earth that God has created, but then because of our sin, pain comes into the childbirth process and God curses the ground, kicks the man out of the plentiful garden, puts him into a place where thorns and thistles grow. Sounds like Scotland, they like thistles. And from there, he has to work with the sweat of his brow because it's difficult. So the world we're in is a fallen world. It's not a perfect world. You see, part of the problem of environmentalism discussions is this assumption that the world is perfect and we've wrecked it, but we can get it back to perfect again. Was that we can never get it back to perfect again because we don't live in the Garden of Eden, we live outside the Garden of Eden. This is a corrupt world, groaning in bondage, waiting for the time when God will come and destroy this world and create a new world, a new heavens and a new earth, where righteousness will dwell, where it will all be perfect. So we're in a declining environment. Ultimately, the astrophysicists, they know that because they know eventually it's all going to go into entropy, isn't it? So we're all just going to do it. But it's so far away in the future that we don't have to think about it. So billions of light years away, it'll all. But this world is in decline. Has been since the day of Eve and Adam. That's the nature of this world. So we will always be fighting against the problems of earthquake, fire, famine. That's what always going to be the case. We never, now, you and I find this hard to live because we live in Sydney. Beautiful place, beautiful climate, plenty of food. Australia produces 6 to 8 times the amount of food than we consume. So it's nothing's a problem for us. But the vast majority of the world still live in these difficulties. All right, so far you've done all right with the Bible. What else did I want to have? All right, they're good. I'm going to come up with some other things altogether which you haven't anticipated, except one of you on Jonah. We'll come back to the cattle in due time. For those of you who are new amongst us, we usually try and run a quick question time at the end of the show. And the end of the show has 10 questions maximum, but I'm happy to have less. Any questions you want to ask on tonight's topic or any other topic around the Bible or life or the universe, I'm happy to try and answer if I can. And I've written down number one and what's going. Well, has anyone seen the mistake in that first diagram of two ways to live? I think it's wrong. Where is it? Anyone see a mistake there? Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Ashley. That was very good. Very clear. Very helpful to us. I'm going on something completely different. Yep.
Is it the lines that look like a halo sort of thing are coming out of the earth rather than the crown?
There are two things wrong. I like that. That's good, yes. That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It starts with the world and then goes to God. It should start with God and then go to the world. The crown should be the first to appear. Now, God created the world. So you have the crown, God, first creating the world. I'll take it up with the publishers. Not happy. Not happy. You've got to learn how to draw it the right way. Otherwise, you confuse people. So that nothing to do with Ed, nothing to do with Ashley. They just taken it from, downloaded it from where they should.
So the crown should be bigger.
The what?
The crown should be bigger.
The crown should be really big. Yeah, well, yeah. However, okay. Our heading today has a small problem to it, doesn't it? Got to be more critical of everything, my friends. So the heading for tonight, this whole series, is what? Failing our planet. What's wrong with that heading? It's not our planet, it's God's planet. So, I'm going to go for lots and lots of Bible verses. Actually, it is our planet, but that's another story. Lots of Bible verses that I want you to be reading. So, get ready as I pass around. Here we go, Psalm 24, verses 1 and 2. Psalm 115, verse 16. There'll be a little pause before we come to Ella on Deuteronomy 25:4, Deuteronomy 22, verse 10, Proverbs 12, verse 10, Exodus 20, verse 10, long one, can you cope? Exodus 23, 10 to 12, Leviticus 25, 7, Psalm 36, verses 6 and 7, Psalm 104, verses 24 to 28. Big responsibilities there, men. Luke 14:5, Matthew 6:26, Matthew 10:29. I wouldn't trust you with one. So, that finishes our load here. So, we start off seeing it's God's world. Thank you very much.
Yep. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Right. He has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers.
The earth is the Lord's and all the things in it. So there's the problem with calling it the failing of our planet. However, Psalm 115 verse 16 says,
the heavens are the Lord's heavens, but the earth he has given to the children of men.
So although the earth is the Lord's, he has given it to us to look after, to care for. So it's not altogether wrong to say we are failing our planet because it's the planet he's given to us, where it's really his planet because he made it. All right. Now I want to move to another subject. You haven't done much except on the subtle of cattle and Jude and Jonah. But what does the Bible teach us about cruelty to animals? See, there's a whole range of environmental issues. One is the world falling apart in catastrophe of heating, etc. Another is caring for animals and the species of the world, watching some species going into extinction and having cruel behaviours towards them. Well, let's look at the cruelty issue as the Bible teaches it, and we start at Deuteronomy 25, verse 4.
You shall not muzzle an ox when it is treading out the grain.
Right? The ox is doing the work of getting the crops. Therefore, you shouldn't muzzle it to prevent it from eating as it goes along, treading out the grain. You should be caring for the ox as doing the work for you. And then Deuteronomy 22:10, thank you, John.
Do not plow with an ox and a donkey together.
Do not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Why not? Well, because it destroys the smaller animal. You can't. If you want to wreck an animal, that's what you do. You mix them together like that. And so you mustn't do that. Two donkeys, two ox, but not an ox and a donkey, because it actually wrecks the donkey, generally, as it would be. Proverbs 12:10.
Whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast, but the mercy of the wicked is cruel.
See, a righteous man will care for his animals. But a wicked man, even in his mercy, is cruel. I mean, the wicked are so wicked that they cannot be trusted with animals. They treat them. And you think, well, that guy. My friends, you and I live, as we'll see in a moment or two, after the Christian explosion of Bible readers. What I'm reading to you today, what I'm getting you to read out loud, is a transforming of our society. Before people paid attention to these verses, we had bear baiting. We had cockfights. We had dog fights. We actually tortured animals for our pleasure and for our fun. But the wicked do that. And their mercy is evil. Or pick it up in Exodus 20, verse 10.
But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates.
You see, we have a day off every week. We have a holiday every week. But the boss would have the holiday and keep the workers working. But no, your workers should have the day off as well. Hey, not just your workers, but your animals as well, and have rest. Picking up in Exodus 23, verses 10 to 12.
For 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield. By the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. The poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. You do likewise with your vineyards and with your olive orchards. For 6 days you shall do work. On the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may have rest, and the son of your servant and the alien may be refreshed.
See, this pattern of 6 days work, 1 day rest, is for your animals that they may rest, but also 6 years you work and then you leave the land fallow. You keep farming every year out, you degrade the environment in which you are there. The Bible was concerned about the environment and caring for the very land that you're farming, but also caring for your animals, looking after them, giving them the same rest that you yourself need. Go across to Leviticus 25:7, which will say much the same way to breath.
And for your cattle and for the wild animals that are in your land, all its yield shall be for food.
Yes, yeah, so whatever the animals are to feed off the very work that they do, and the wild animals are to feed of the land that God has given. That is, the Lord is good to animals. He himself is good to animals. Go to Psalm 36, verses 6 and 7.
Your righteousness is like the mountains of God. Your judgments are like the death of a great deep. Man and beast, you say, O Lord. How precious is your steadfast love, O God. The children of mankind take refuge in the shadow of your wings.
See, not only does God save man, but saves the beasts as well. He's concerned for them. We'll pick that up again in Psalm 104, verse 24 to 28. Big loud voice, please.
O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. Here is the sea, great and wide, which teems with creatures innumerable, living things both small and great. There go the ships, and Leviathan, which you formed to play in it. These all look to you, to give them their food in due season. When you give it to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are filled with good things.
You see, God created all this multitude of animals and creatures. I mean, there are more species than we've discovered in the sea. You know, I mean, God's abundance of different life forms, they're all part of God's pleasure. And not only does he make them, but he feeds them all. He looks after them, he cares for them. Right, and they all look to him for food in the end. Luke 13:15 starts preaching of Jesus. He teaches.
The Lord answered him, "You hypocrite!
Doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water?
Yes. See, he's attacking the hypocrisy of not healing a human. He says, you're total hypocrites, because if your ox and cattle need something, you look after them. Why won't you look after this human in need? But notice the character. He assumes it's right that they'll be looking after their animals like that. Pick it up again for us, please, in Luke 14:5. Yeah, care for life on the Sabbath day means you don't say, oh, it's the Sabbath day, I'll come back next tomorrow and get the cow out. No, you take the cow out because you're concerned for the welfare of the beast. And picking it up in Matthew 6:26.
Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they?
He's trying to show the enormous value of the human, but at the same time he says, well, look at the birds. God looks after them. In all their multitude, God looks after them and feeds them. The millions and millions of birds, God looks after. And aren't you of more value than them? And then likewise, the last one is Matthew 10:29.
Yes. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny, and not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father?
Two for a penny. They're actually worth nothing, next to nothing. And yet God knows every sparrow in the world. And not one falls to the ground without God knowing about it. That is, God cares for his creatures. And godly people will care for God's creatures. Rather than being cruel and overusing them or using them badly, we make sure that we feed them. We make sure that they share in the harvest that they bring in for us. We make sure they enjoy the same rest that we enjoy. We actually provide for them, look after them, like God does. Now, this is very important when we come to our history spot. We have a history spot most weeks, and we've got a very interesting history spot that Livia's going to come and bring us our quite fascinating history spot tonight.